Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
So one of the things I think is interesting in the Obi Randall discussion is that I still don't think of Obi as like being a really good three-point shooter. He obviously showed development, especially in the later games when he actually had playing time. But I don't think of Obi as like, oh, you. Like I don't, whenever I see Obi take a three, I usually think like, oh, that the defense is probably fine with that. Like compared to other things Obi could do, let him take a three. But other than Randall's 2021 season, and like he's a little up and down, but generally, like he's been down in most of his career as a below average like 3-point shooter. So Obi doesn't even need to improve that much to get to where Randall basically is anyway. And if 3-point shooting is a category that Randall doesn't have over Obi, then there's a lot
of finished with the same percentage last year, by the way.
What's that?
They finished with the same 3-point percentage last year.
Yeah. If Obi becomes equal or superior to Randall as a 3-point shooter, I mean, that really, I think, pushes
lot of people say is Randall can create his own shot, right? Which to me is like, if we have Brunson and Barrett here and we want to give them more touches, I think you can always use more shot creation, but also those players have to be good off the ball, right? That's how the Warriors work. Like the Warriors have a lot of shot creators, but they can also function off ball. But I mean, do you think Obi can't really create his own offense? Do you think that, how much does that weigh into your evaluation?
I'm not convinced that he can't. I think given the role he's been in, he can't. But I think if you had, and obviously, you know, again, there's a wide range of how things can end up going down. But if you had, let's say with the Knicks in theory, Obi's your four and you have quick, decisive playmakers all around him. So like hopefully a point guard who can play make, another wing who can play make, and not necessarily, you know, all primary guys, but like the old Knicks, like a team where just people can move the ball and they're smart the way the Adelman Kings were, the way the Jazz have often been. If you just had a team like that, I think with quick like 4-on-3s that you can create off action on the perimeter and quick switches where Obi ends up with like a guard on him, I think Obi can create out of that. I think if Obi had the opportunity and the security to know, like, we need you to learn how to catch the ball and hit a quick turnaround jumper over an opponent who, when they jump, is half a foot below you. Like, a lot of the moves at KP, we wanted him to learn against smaller people. I think Obi could do some of that. So he's still, you know, secondary. He's getting the ball from someone and then going into his move. But I don't think we have at all explored the full capacity of the things that Obi Toppin can do if he is given the opportunity to like fully do them. So I think playmaking, I mean, Randall's light years ahead of him right now, but I can say that I know what Obi's limit is.
That's what I disagree. I don't think playmaking is necessary because like Obi's a way better passer.
Like, do I agree on that? Yeah. I mean,
oh, Randall gets more assists, but in terms of just the vision and like just knowing it. Thinking like a step ahead, like when Obi takes a dribble handoff, he's not just like he can see that Alex, I'll throw it to you. Like, who do you think as a playmaker to like kind of make people better around them? Who are you taking in that?
I think it depends. I think Randall is better in that, like what you said, he gets more assists. So he's good at playmaking in that, like, Rajon Rondo sense, you know, where it's like he can fish for an assist pretty easily. And like when he was as good as he was in 2021, he was really good at doing that. I thought, you know, I don't think that's like a super hot take. Like he was able to go in and he would generate double teams. And at least from that one scenario, he was pretty good at passing out of those and finding the guy that became open due to him becoming double teamed. Whereas this past year, I felt like he wasn't getting quite as much respect from defenses that exposed his, it, as you said, you know, maybe he's not as good of a passer as we thought. Like, you know, he's still getting a decent number of assists, but how many turnovers is he getting, you know, and how many almost turnovers is he getting where he's not quite putting the ball where it needs to be. And it's kind of disrupting the whole play and the whole flow of the offense. Whereas Obi, I think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, you've brought up creation a few times, I think when people talk about the creation differences between the two, it's like in the Carmelo Anthony sense of it, you know what I mean? Where it's like, if you give Julius Randle the ball in a,
but he's not even as efficient as Carmelo Anthony.
Right. At this stage. But I'm just saying, like, if you give Randle the ball in space at one-on-one against the defender and just say, score the ball on this guy versus doing the same thing to Obi Toppin, Randle is better at that one facet of basketball. And I think that's what people go back to as
the
far
ball
as,
don't stop.
Basketball. Yeah. The ball don't stoppers go to that sort of mentality about what creation is. But I that's not how basketball is played, at least not good basketball. Maybe that's Tibbs's favorite version and Randall's favorite version, but it's not how good teams play. And you know, so functionally on a basketball court with five players on the court against another five players, I think Obi does have better abilities to try to get his teammates involved, which is with the skills, like what you said, where he could come around off a dribble handoff and immediately be looking for like, okay, is someone going to cut? Is the defense collapsing on me? Am I going to be able to whip this out to the corner? Is the defense not reacting fast enough? Should I just go up and go for a jam or a layup or whatever? Which he got so much better at those like acrobatic finishes around the hoop last year, whether it was his ridiculous like up and under dunks that he would pull out fairly often, or the, you know, just the general finesse that he had with contorting his body around people.
He's astonishing at the rim. He's like literally astonishing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's definitely better at that, which is another facet of playmaking, like knowing when to make the right call. You know, I think that he's better at those things for sure. I don't want Obi Toppin bringing the ball up the floor like I once wanted Julius Randle bringing the ball up the floor, which again is where that difference in like what is playmaking comes in. Like, can you set up?
As Knicks fans, we should say Dallas Amico, friend of the pod, one of my favorite Knicks analysts out there, once wrote an article about Noah Vonleh bringing, and I was all in on that, and I bought into that 100%. I have bought into Point Hazonia. I have bought into Touré Murray.
Hey, so Knox? What about Point Knox?
No, Point I Knox. Never bought into that. That's a different level. But
we don't talk about that article.
I think there are people who probably buy into Point Cam, the guy Knox was traded for. But sorry to interrupt. But as Knicks fans, we are definitely starved of guys that can just bring the ball up and do crazy shit. So,
well, and it all comes back to, right, like getting Brunson this year. So like you get Brunson because you want to fill this gaping void at point guard that has existed forever, where you haven't had this like surefire guy at the like nominal point guard spot that could do that in so long, or at least do it competently. You thought maybe you had a good flyer last year with Kemba. It was terrible. You had Elfrid Payton for 2 years before that, more terrible. You know, it's like you're finally getting a guy who's like actually in his prime, ready to rock. Like, give him the ball and have him bring it up. We're now at a point where we don't have to fantasize about like, oh, could Julius Randle be like effectively the point guard or like the LeBron James of this team? Because it doesn't have to be now. But I don't think he realizes that. And that's but what we're going to see if they don't move him.
And the other thing is like, do you think he, because I talked about this with Schwinn on the pod, and in LA, he was just a kind of role man. Every time the Knicks played LA, like, he gave Porzingis work. He also couldn't guard Porzingis. But, you know, like, he was a wrecking ball, right? Off ball, getting the ball on the move, you know, not a lot of thinking and all that, right? Just kind of, he was, you know, I think Randall's at his best, the way we describe running backs in the NFL, a one-cut runner, right? And Randall is at his worst when, if you look at that analogy, when Randall tries to be Barry Sanders, he's not as good. When Randall can be Adrian Peterson, he's really good. But it seems like he almost doesn't want to be that, because he has to leave the Lakers, right? He did not want to stay there. He came to New York in part to be the guy. How much stock do you put into all those things, right? And because I think a lot of these reports can be, you know, they're fed through multiple layers of the telephone. Randall, to me, I have tried to keep all of my criticisms of him to, like, on the court. Like, if I see him not run back on defense, I'm going to say he's not running back on defense. I'm not going to call him lazy for it. If I see him, like, take bad shots, I'm going to call him selfish. But that's, you know, how much do you think it's just, you know, and I get that this can be a tough thing to glean, but, you know, do you think that's the thing? Like, he just is unwilling, even if it is Jalen Brunson, a guy who has a lot of cachet with him, to, like, kind of step into a secondary role?
I'll throw that to you first, Miranda, if you want to get to that.
I'm very interested in that question. And I think it's interesting on two levels. It's interesting on whether Randall would acquiesce to that sort of thing. And I also, this is something I wanted to ask both of you before. Like, in the real politic of putting a roster together, do you think that the Knicks ultimately would want Randall accepting and being effective in this lesser tertiary role? Like, where he's obviously taking on less quantity, but it's qualitatively improving. Do you think the Knicks want that if their ultimate goal is to trade him? Because with what he's making, like, do you think teams would say, yep, we want, you know, 4 years, $119 million for our tertiary star? Or do you think most teams, just because of the money, cap obviously is rising? So I honestly don't know what to make of this. Like, do you think Randall's contract is something that would appeal to someone as, yep, there's our third guy, he's going to put us over the top?
I have a great response to that. And it would be a return question. I'll lob it right back, like sure. U.S. Open tennis. How many teams in the NBA right now do you think would sign up for bringing Andrew Wiggins onto their team if they were given an opportunity for, like, a first-round pick or something?
How many teams would trade, like, a first for Wiggins?
Yeah, like, let's say contenders. So let's say that, like, a third of the league are contenders, like 10 teams. How many?
And he's making, like, yeah, okay. How many contenders would trade a first round pick for Andrew Wiggins? They're not popping off my head. Just to rip through them quick, I think the Bucks would do it. I don't think the Celtics would do it. I could see the Sixers doing it. I could see obviously it works on the Warriors. I can't see Phoenix doing it, just because I think they already have the rotation they want. Clippers, that would be kind of nasty if the Clippers added him. Lakers certainly would. Dallas would. I think a lot of teams would.
Right. So that's my point. Like, I think that Randall on his current dollar figure is about equal to Andrew Wiggins. He's making less than Jalen Brunson now, less than RJ Barrett, or like about the same as Jalen Brunson and less than RJ Barrett once RJ's extension kicks in. So I just think, like, those sort of players do have the level of value. Like, Randall did sign still a value contract if that's all he becomes.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, it's still a good deal if he becomes like a third star. So I think the best thing that the Knicks could do for his value, if they want to trade him, is to turn him into that sort of player. Sort of like what happened when Minnesota traded Andrew Wiggins and paid to get off of Andrew Wiggins, like paid extra in that D'Angelo Russell trade to use Wiggins as a trade chip there. the Warriors then took him and said, why were they tasking you with being like the alpha? Like, we're going to just make you into not even the beta. What comes after the beta? The theta? I don't know. Gamma, like, whatever, the gamma. You're going to be Delta. The next letter in the Greek alphabet. You know, like, yeah. You're not even going to be the one or the two. We're going to make you into like the super role player. And he turned into almost like a souped up Andre Iguodala in many ways from when Iggy was on those championship teams. So I think a ton of teams would sign up for that. And so I think from the Knicks perspective, if Randle is willing to agree to do that, and if he's serious about going to a contender, that's the other thing. Does Randle want to be the best player on a mediocre team? Mm-hmm. Or does he want to be a cog in a real contender? And if the answer is the former, then he could just keep doing the same things he's been doing, and the Knicks will probably pay to get off of him at some point, and he could go do that in, you know, wherever, freaking whatever, like the Kings or something in a few years when they get desperate and want their next big thing. You know what I mean? But if he wants to like legitimately contribute to a real winning team, he's going to have to recalibrate at some point. And we've already seen like he could play good man-on-man defense. He can, you know, he can make some decent decisions. He can shoot somewhat decently and better off the catch, I think, than he did when he was shooting like step backs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Except for that one super nonsense stretch during the empty gyms. But mostly, like most players, he shoots better off the catch than he does, you know, off a pull up. And he also does, as we saw with the Lakers and then with the Pelicans, like he could be a high usage pick and roll man, but he could be a good pick and roll man. So it's going to take a, you know, a slice of humble pie from him to, you know, make that work. But if he's willing to, I think that there would definitely be a market for him because he's definitely very talented.
Let me ask you one more random question. If your NBA, if your Nick Fairy godmother came down and offered you, like, I sprinkle this, Randle is going to have another 2021 season, like all NBA second team kind of season, 25, 10, 5, the shooting, you know, 40. He's going to have 2021 all over again. Would you actually want that? Because if Randle played that well, Obi's getting nothing. And there's no guarantee, again, that Randle would ever play that well again in the future. It would just guarantee, like, he's probably not going anywhere the rest of his deal, because if he has 2 years like that, like, his value is going to go up to you. So you could have Randle, like, in peak Randle God mode, but would you actually want it next season?
That's a tough question. I mean,
it's weird, right?
It's complicated because I feel like I want to see Obi shine and have him have the opportunity to, but I mean, 2021 Randle was a phenomenal player. And if he could prove that he could do that in non-empty gyms, then who's to say that he couldn't sustain it? I guess that would be my follow-up question to the Knicks fairy godmother would be like, was it just going to be a one-off and then the next year he's going to suck again? Because if so, then no, I don't want it. Keep the fairy dust to yourself. We'll just go ahead as planned.
Stacey, how many of the... Sorry, both of you.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, Stacey.
Stacey, I was curious to this a little bit before we actually started recording, talking about the upside of the young players. I don't think this means anything. I'm just curious. When you look at the ultimate upside of, say, Obi, RJ, Quickly and Grimes, like, feel free to dream upside. Do you think any of them have an upside above Randle's 2021 season?
As an overall contributor, yeah.
Yeah.
I think all three of them do.
The three being who?
RJ, Quickly, and Grimes. And no, four. I'll put Obi in there.
All four.
I think Grimes as an impact can reach the level of a guy like Mikal Bridges.
Fine.
I think RJ Barrett, people have talked about a Jimmy Butler type ceiling. I think Jimmy Butler is a really outlier of a player, first of all. Just as a side note. This dude had, like, his first season in college, he had a free throw rate above one. That means he drew more free throws than shot attempts. That was a small sample size. But his next 2 years were like 87% and 89%.
Was he at Marquette?
He was at Marquette, yeah.
Okay.
This is not a knock on RJ Barrett at all. This is to say that Jimmy Butler's most important strength is an outlier. It is as much an outlier as Steph's shooting is. There is nobody who draws fouls the way that Jimmy Butler does. And I think RJ might be the best facsimile of that, but he's not that. But you know, that skill set, you can see the path to that being, and I think I do think he's a better passer than Julius Randle. I think to the extent that I've heard about RJ having tunnel vision or not being able to pass out on his drives, I've thought that was overstated and often dependent on personnel. So I think I'm a little bit lower on people who think that RJ is going to be this top 10 player in the NBA, but I think top 20 is very much within reason. And the biggest thing is kind of his work ethic, of course, right? I mean, you're lying to yourself. You don't think that was a big part of the Knicks extending him. He is that guy. He is a culture setter for the Knicks. Quickly, I think with his pull-up shooting ability, like you can't talk about a lot of guys with his pull-up shooting ability. Like guards of that profile do not defend as well as Quickly. He doesn't miss rotations. He's got the length to make things happen. He's got the quickness to play on ball. And he's a good passer. Like, he's just an extremely complete player, which is why it's tough to find a comp for Quickly, because most guards of that ilk have some weakness. And Quickly's thing is less that he doesn't have he doesn't really have a weakness besides the fact that he's not 6'5", but his length even makes up for that. It's more about the fact that he doesn't score at the rim that well, but he's a very complete player for his profile. The problem is more, what is he great at? I don't know that he's an elite pull-up shooter. Alex, you might disagree. I'd be interested if you thought that. I don't think he's an elite pull-up shooter on like a Steph level or something. Well, Steph is outlier, so let's not even talk about Steph. I don't know that he's going to get much higher than 35, 36. So like, let's say Dame level. But I think he's a good pull-up shooter. And I think that opens up a lot of other things he can do. I think I could see him being top 20 or top 30, which I think is higher than Julius Randle is now. And Obi, I think it's team specific. I think there's teams where, and this is kind of what I was getting at before, given where I think the Knicks thrived last year, if you remember, for me, the most fun Knicks games, there's the Heat game. There's the most, no, it wasn't even the Heat game. The Heat game was really just that fourth quarter. I went on Locked On Knicks after that. Alex, I missed you that time, but I went out with Gavin that time. We talked about it. That was one of the most fun games of the season. But the most fun game for me was the Clippers game, where they outscored. They played the young guys, and the vets were playing. Like, Randall was healthy when the young guys played, and these were lineups that were comprised of Grimes, IQ, Obi, RJ, Cam, and Sims. There was five of those six were on the floor at all times. They outscored the Clippers, who were a play-in team last year, 36-4. So, and you watch that game. They were ball hawking on defense. They're getting out in transition, moving the ball on offense. That to me is the vision of this team. And that wasn't the only time we saw that. And I think for this team, Obi fits into that much more. But there could be another team, you know, like I think Randle would fucking kill it on the Warriors, you know, especially if he bought in on defense. If he played, I don't think he's Draymond Green, but I think if he played the Draymond or even Wiggins role on the Warriors, I think he'd kill it. So with those kind of things, they can be team specific. But to answer your question, yeah, I think those guys can be better than Randle, who I think is somewhere between. I don't think he played this way last year, but he's somewhere between the 35th and 45th best player in the league. That would be my estimation of Randle right now, if he buys in and plays into your scheme.
Yeah, so to double back on the Quickly thing, I'm high on Quickly's ability to shoot pull-up shots if he has the room, and I'm high on his ability to create the room, but the thing that I think will always hold him back from potentially being in that like Luka, Steph, you know, Dame, whoever else you want to say tier of like the best creating pull up guys in the league would be, his release is still a little weird to me. And it always has been, and it always will be, where I feel like it takes longer to get into his shot.
Like, and it's lower, right?
Yeah, and it's lower, or he starts from a lower point. Like, he eventually gets to the high point, but he starts from around like his face, you know, and it's not a quick movement away from his face. Like, he like gets into it, lines it up. He's got that very distinct, like, wide legged stance with like, where he's almost looks like he's like leaning into it as he's shooting, sort of. And I just think that will forever sort of limit his ability to, like, I don't know, if he had like Ben Simmons on him or something and is trying to like work over a screen and free himself up for a quick three pointer. I think that release will always limit him in those sort of scenarios, which would in turn sort of cap his like star upside in some ways. That said, he's gotten so much better at so many other parts of the game that, like, yeah, I'm with you. I think at his absolute ceiling, you always bring this up, but like at one point,
no, I just bring it up to as a, it's, yeah.
Oh, I know. It's like trolling me, and it's funny, and I love it. But I'm going to troll myself now and say, like, at one point we were doing, like, well, what do you see the ceilings of all these guys as being? And it was, like, after IQ's rookie season, and we had you on Locked On Knicks, and, like, you said, we were like, oh, what do you think for IQ? And I forget who you even said, but, like.
I said Tony Parker, which, by the way, would be an awesome outcome. Like, Tony Parker's a Hall of Famer. But.
And then I was like, well, why not Steph Curry? And you were like, whoa. And I was like, now I'm like, I don't even remember saying that. But at any rate.
I think this was in the fever throes of the rookie season. Yeah. And, but like, because I feel like a lot of people know me as like the quickly guy. And like, I was like, shit, even I was too low on him. Maybe, I don't know. So.
Yeah. I just, you know, when I look at like what his ceiling could be, it always is in like a high, high tier of player. Granted, I think we've now seen through 2 years. I mean, granted, we only get so many looks at him because of how Tibbs plays him. Towards the end of the season, it certainly made a really good case for the fact that, like, yeah, maybe there is a star waiting in this guy that just needs to finally be uncorked, you know? But like, you know, I don't think it's entirely likely, but I do think that he could reach that level of like self-creating player who's also great at creating for others, who's also good at all of the fundamentals and plays good defense. I mean, that, yeah, could be like a top 20 player in the league potentially if he really hits the ceiling.
The comp I've always had for him is like Kyle Lowry / Van Vliet. I will bet you a dollar that if you ask the Masai Ujiri who on the Knicks he really liked, maybe because RJ Barrett is Canadian, he would say RJ. I have a feeling he would love Emmanuel Quickley.
Yeah.
They took Malachi Flynn 2 picks after Emmanuel Quickley. I wonder if they would have taken Quickley then. But that's because if you look at the thing, like his skill set, he's a guy, by the way, he pops in advanced stats a lot more than he pops in the eye stats, on the eye test, right? By advanced stats, he's like the Knicks' best player.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you've seen, I've seen guys like that, like Kyle Lowry, by like, if you do 3-5 year DRAPM at Kyle Lowry's peak, he was a top 10 player. Most people would have viewed him more as top 30. I think that applies to Van Vliet as well. So I think, what is the truth? The truth is probably somewhere in the middle, where like Kyle Lowry's probably better than the 30th best player, but probably not a top 10 player. And I think that's where Quickley ends up. Like a guy who's like very well known as a good player, but if you look at like his impact, it's even much higher.
The other thing to note from that draft too, you know, not only would the Raptors maybe have taken him, but there was like reports out there that the Knicks got to where they got to get him because the Denver Nuggets were interested in him, if I remember correctly, who I think had the next pick.
Oh, was it that? I thought it was the Celtics actually, but
or was it the Celtics? Oh, I might be conflating that with Grimes. Grimes, I think, had a lot of fans with the Nuggets. But then I was going to say, though, then the Nuggets wound up taking Bones Highland, who's like almost I don't want to say a carbon copy, but an extremely similar player to Quickley.
Yeah, and also a guy the Knicks were – I think the Knicks ultimately settled on Grimes over Bones. But from all the pre-draft reports – those Bones was a guy they were very high on.
And they looked at him and were like, do we need 2 Quicklies for Tibbs to not play, or do we want to get a different archetype?
I am of the opinion that 2 Quicklies would be great if you just have, because like My bold prediction for next year, by the way, is that Bones Highland is going to take a leap on defense the same way Quickly took. I mean, we can all agree Quickly as a rookie was not great on defense. Mm-hmm. And last year he was, I would argue he was a better overall defender than Grimes. Grimes is a rookie. I think Grimes is a better defender than Quickly was as a rookie. And I think Bones is going to take a similar leap in his second year. But I think that the like long pull-up shooting combo guard who are undervalued because they're also tend to be good on defense. So, but we've talked a lot about that. So I want to ask you a couple of predictions, Alex, if this mm-hmm. is so start of the season, I'm going to ask you a couple guys, who do you think is on the roster? So I'm going to start with one, Derrick Rose.
Is he on the roster or is he not?
Yeah.
He'll be on the roster. 100%.
Okay.
1,000%.
Evan Fournier.
I'm going to say also yes, I think, but less confident than Rose.
Okay. And then the third one, this is the most important one, Ryan Arcidiacono. No, that's a joke. Julius Randle.
My heart says no, my mind says yes.
Wow.
I think, like, as far as if he'll be on the roster or not. So my heart says no, he won't be, because the Knicks will put two and two together that they should probably move him. Hopefully a deal will come up with like the Lakers or something. I feel like the Lakers are in that sweet spot of desperation right now where they have way higher aspirations than the Knicks and about the same ceiling as a team right now. And I feel like they're gonna feel the heat the closer we get to the season and look for some shakeup like they did with Westbrook last year, stupidly, and try to get Westbrook off the team and, you know, get some other impact player in. What other player is there that they could bring in at this stage? I can't think of really any that are potentially available. So I think that they would, you know, if the Knicks said, hey, give us Westbrook and your two future first round picks, we'll give you Randle. And maybe this is where Fournier comes in. Like, we'll give you Randle and Fournier, which works with the money because Westbrook gets paid such an obscene amount of money. Maybe they would be like, yeah, all right, what are first round picks? Like, we're trying to win one more championship before LeBron leaves us to go play with this kid.
They have been very cautious with those picks, though, so far.
Have they? I mean, they just haven't found the right deal, I don't think. I think the AD trade and then the fact they even made a Westbrook trade to begin with, like, I feel like they're right. I think they're very desperate and kind of ripe for the trading, you know, to win a trade with them, or at least in the minds of the Knicks, win a trade. Julius Randle could very well go there. And like, if he's going to defer to anybody, he would defer to LeBron, who's, you know, one of the two or three greatest players of all time, and Anthony Davis, who he's previously played with, that he knows is, you know, when healthy, one of the best players in the NBA. So, like, I feel like he would defer
there. But it's also, like, didn't he – so I talked to Shun about this – sorry for rehashing stuff. But I talked to Shun about this today. Didn't he also try to get away from the Lakers because they got LeBron?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I think that he was a little upset that they weren't going to give him more of a chance. But now at this stage in his career, wouldn't he?
Which is, by the way, if you're like a 30-year player, and you're like, why would you sign LeBron instead of giving me more? But like, that's a little okay, you know, like
little bold. Yeah, I don't know. But then the other thing too is like at this stage in his career, I feel like Randle would view himself more as like, if he's approving a trade to the Lakers, it's to like make a big three there, you know, and like be the third star, be the new Chris Bosh or whatever, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, I think that he would just look at it differently now. Like, he'd be like, this isn't an insult. This is a compliment. They want to add me to LeBron because like, they know that we can accomplish a championship together or whatever. I feel like his mentality would be different this time around. Plus, time heals all wounds. He's probably at this point realized like, maybe the grass isn't greener on the other side. And going back to LA and playing with LeBron wouldn't be so bad.
Matt, I want to get you in here. What do you think about those three players potentially being on the Knicks roster this season?
Sorry, I was giving my dog food. What was your question?
Rose, Fournier, Randall. How many of those players are on the roster when the season starts?
All of them.
All of them?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't see this team make... I think Tibbs wants Rose on the team and knows that he can't ask for more than 50 or 60 games in the regular season. So that dovetails nicely with... So I'm going to have to give some guard more minutes. Organically, there's some more minutes for quickly. And when Rose is available, that's Tim's guy. Like, he wants him there. Fournier, I don't see Fournier going anywhere until it's part of a larger deal. And I don't see any meaningful... Obviously, things can come up that no one's heard about. I can't currently think of a big deal the Knicks would make that Fournier would be a part of. And who's the third one? Oh, Randall. I think Tibbs has some affinity for Randall. I think because of 2021, Tibbs is really, really... If the ship's going down, Randall's on the ship, Tibbs is going down. Like, I think he likes Randall a lot. I don't know how Thibodeau could be like credited as he was last season by the young players specifically for like the extra practices he would hold all the time just with them, and then square that with like the obvious refusal to give them minutes. So Fournier, Rose, Randall, those are three veterans. They can all play. Tibbs is going to play them. I don't know. This is what I was saying earlier. Like the question to me, if I don't know what to expect of this season, the Knick roster to me doesn't feel like it should be settled. Like this is like if you are, you know, writing a song and you get to the very last chord and instead of resolving it, you just let that suspended note like hang, and the Knicks don't feel done. And I can't see if they're gonna have 11 guys, Reddish is someone who's not gonna play. I could see Sims getting frozen out of the rotation.
I think that's gonna happen. I mean, it's center, so they're always in foul trouble, but Sims is going to be situational, which we have to live with that. I like the Hartenstein signing signers. I can't get too mad
about
that.
I do too. But I just think like Tibbs I have wondered how much Tibbs and the front office are still on the same page. I think the organization is coherent and competent enough now that we don't get – the Knicks don't really leak stuff. Like, if you think about the last 5 or 6 years, like, the Knicks are not an embarrassment off the court. They're a pretty tight ship. But just watching how last season unfolded, particularly with the young players, and the fact that now this offseason – when Leon Rose wants to make the big move that he came here to make, he can't make it, in part because his young players don't have the rep. Obviously, the draft picks were a thing, but like none of the Knick young players, even RJ, moved the needle enough for another team to be like, okay, like that's we're dropping in for that.
Yeah,
I don't remember where I was going with that.
No, I'm a little bit, I tend to agree. I think they want to keep Rose because just like him. I think for the people that in the front office that may think that it's worth getting more value from him, I would love to see Rose in Dallas as a basketball fan. I think he'd be great there playing next to Luka, shoring up that unit, replacing what they lost in Brunson. We cannot get their 2023 pick because of course we own it. But, I think that those kind of deals are probably the best use of Rose for us because we're not contending and he'd be more valuable to a team like Dallas or like a team with championship aspirations that could use a bench ball handler and a who can also play it alongside a guy like Luka or a guy like Giannis or whoever. But playing this out, right? If all three of those guys are on the roster next year, how do you see this playing out? Because I think the pessimist view is if Randall doesn't buy in, the Knicks' biggest opportunity to increase in that win total, besides just randomness favoring them, they did have a 41 net rating, the net rating of a 41 win team last year. So there was probably a little bit of luck involved in terms of them finishing with 37. But in addition to that, Brunson is the biggest lever, right? If you get this guy to play the minutes, you know, to show what he showed when he didn't get play with Luka, maybe amp up his 3-point rate a little bit, because we know he's capable, it just doesn't take a lot. That's what can get them maybe to 45, 46 wins. But the downside to that is if Randall doesn't buy in, does that cap it? Or if Fournier stays and Rose stays and Quickly and Obi are just getting 12 to 20 minutes a game next year, does that cause problems? How do you see this playing out? And I'll throw this to you, Alex, first. Like, because the way I see it is this. My view is that if they were to just, even if they had to use some of those protected firsts to get rid of Randall and Fournier, if they bet on the kids, if Leon Rose bets on the kids, even if they're an 8-man rotation, you say, let's see what we got in Cam. Even we haven't even talked about Cam Reddish, but the way this is, like, he's out of the rotation. We're fretting about IQ's minutes. Cam's out, and we used the first round pick on him. You know, if you're in that position, the way I see it playing out is, I think that's like a team that's fighting for a play-in spot. I think by December, they're, you know, hovering around 500. I think at that point, if the front office is like, well, we need to move Fournier and Randall to see what we have, it won't go over as well. And if they still stuck, I think part of the reason they're not trading these guys, and I think you alluded to this a little bit, Alex, is that they don't want to lose trades. They don't want to give up value in a trade. If they trade them at the trade deadline, at that point, maybe it's too late. If they decide to say, instead of that, we'll throw the easiest sacrificial horse and we'll fire Tibbs, that might be too late. And I think that if they hold on to this team and bet on it this season, and it ends up being a middling team that's a fringe 10 seed, I think they're in a much worse position than if they just traded them now. And if they bet on the kids, and you know, let's say Quickly in a larger role is worse. Let's say Obi isn't ready for the power forward role. I don't think anyone will kill Leon Rose for that, right? Let's say you trade Randall to Charlotte or LA, right? And Randall shows out. It's probably going to be more in an Andre Drummond way of showing out than like this was a core piece. If you trade Rose, he's definitely going to show out, but it's also going to be like he's better placed if he's in Milwaukee or Dallas or something, right? I don't think Rose's job would really be in danger if he did that. I think if Rose sticks with this roster and they're middling by February, I think his job would be in jeopardy. And I wonder, because it seems like the conventional wisdom says everyone's coming back. And I wonder, with like any scenario that play out in my mind, there's like a 5% chance of this working out, keeping everyone, and, you know, Brunson takes them to the next level, Randall buys in, and Fournier and Rose staying on the team keeps them a playoff team. That would be worth it. And I think that has like a 5% chance of playing out. Whereas all the other scenarios, I think, are just much more in their favor if they're just to lean into the kids. But I don't know. I'll throw it to you, Alex. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, so to be clear, like when you asked me, like, do I think that these guys are going to be on the team? Like,
I know that, but I'm playing out these scenarios, and maybe these are realistic. That's
no, I know. Yeah. I was going to say, like, all when I was talking about, like, with my heart and my mind, every single one in my heart, I say, get rid of them. Like, because I just think it makes more sense. You know, it so this is like, I feel like such a broken record. I feel like I bring this up on every single show I ever do, including my own. But like, my number one thing with young cores, everybody loves to like talk about having a young core and, you know, how great it is and blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, the Knicks have a young core and this, that, the other. Doesn't matter. Like, you have the young core. But like, we're starting to see where it does matter, like getting these guys playing time and finding ways to free it up for them, because it's twofold, right? Like, we just saw the Knicks struggle in a trade negotiation. I think in large part because their young players haven't had enough time to show their value to an NBA executive yet, you know, or just to show their value on an NBA floor. And whether that ends up being showing value so that the Knicks can package them for someone bigger and better and badder, you know, that's one thing, or whether it's just the Knicks just reap the benefits, that's a whole other thing. But either way, the Knicks have not been setting up their young guys in any sort of position to prove that one way or the other. The other thing is that young cores have expiration dates, and that's why rebuilds generally take about 3-4 years before you start, you know, really saying, okay, you know, we got to figure out how to win now, because rookie contracts are the timer. You know, the second that you draft that first guy on his rookie deal that effectively jump starts the rebuild, then you flip that little boggle timer over and it starts dripping sand. And you got to start thinking about, like, okay, you know, we're going to make these draft picks in the next few years. What are the moves that we're going to make to build a winning team around RJ Barrett, who's the guy? He's the first, well, or Mitchell Robinson, I guess. Kind of, I guess Mitch is technically the first one. RJ was like the first major, major domino, though, like the one that they've, you know, kind of made the biggest investment in now, where they've now put the solid starter to fringe star price tag on him. And so now it's like, all right, now things are getting real. Now RJ is going to be taking up, you know, let's say that, I think I just saw a report that the NBA is telling teams to expect the salary cap in 23-24 to potentially be like $132 million or something like that. So if you're going off of that number, then that means, okay, RJ Barrett is now going to be taking up, if all the incentives kick in, which maybe they don't, but let's even just say without incentives, like, he's going to be taking up $27 million of our $130 million total, which is a large
chunk. And just to clarify for listeners, incentives do count towards the cap, right?
I don't believe they do unless they kick in. I could be wrong.
Well, because I guess the question is, if RJ's incentive is, let's say, make an all-star game, but we can still sign someone with that cap that hasn't been used, right? Like, if he makes the all-star game after the fact and we sign someone, like, that doesn't reduce the Knicks' flexibility, right? If there are ways in which it does, like, I'm actually just asking too, because I don't know.
Yeah, that might be one that I would have to go look at, like, CBA FAQ for or something, or just call Jeremy Cohen, like, I'm on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, using my call friend right now.
I don't think we don't have any money, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, damn. All right. Well, I'm not answering this question on principle then.
if we start issuing Strickland NFTs, then I can pay you in those.
Strickland NFTs, yes.
So that's the next question, Alex. When are the Strickland NFTs coming out?
Right after the what's another absurd object that we could come out with? Right after the Strickland Teslas come out. at any rate, I think. To get back to my other point, like, you just made this big investment in RJ. Next summer, you're going to have to make a decision on, do we want to make a big investment in OB and IQ? And then the summer after that, you're going to have to make a big decision about, do we want to make an investment in Grimes and McBride? Or actually before that with McBride. And actually, same thing with Sims. Like, McBride and Sims, you might have to decide as soon as, like, next summer or the summer after that. But, like, not just for an extension, like, for a full-on extra contract. So it's like, everybody loves to you know, talk about, like, oh, the young core is great, you know, whatever. But if you're not utilizing them properly and utilizing their development window properly, you're not just doing them a disservice by not giving them more reps to get better, but you're also doing yourself a disservice by not knowing how to evaluate them and then potentially overpaying based off untapped potential that could have been tapped or not tapped during, you know, their tenure with the team during their rookie contract. And it's just, it gets messy. And, like, I just feel like the Knicks have really, by virtue of, I mean, RJ is the one where I do feel like they've done it right with RJ, and they've actually kind of done it right with Mitch too, where both those guys were given a lot of playing time to figure things out and to figure themselves out. With Mitch, they took a good approach where they said, you know what, like, we're not going to start him for a little while, but we're going, this was back in like his rookie and then his sophomore season. Like, we're not going to start him, but we'll have him close games. And, you know, no matter what, he's going to get like the most minutes of our centers, but you know, he's just not going to start because he's not comfortable going out there and starting quite yet. So they did that the right way with RJ. They just kind of threw him right in right away. And that was obviously the best decision. I think that he's progressed really nicely and quickly in Obi though. And to a lesser extent Grimes. Now it's sort of like, well, these guys, I feel like if quickly and Obi have another year this coming year, that's been like their first two. If you asked me this time next year, like, oh, would you give them a contract extension? I'd be like, I don't know what to pay them, you know, because I'm not going to know what to make of them going down the line. So, you know, I think that's where it comes down. This all circles back to the initial question. Sorry, I went on a tangent, but like the initial question of like, do I think that the Knicks should pay to get off of Randall and Fournier? Like, this is another brain disagreeing with the heart. My brain says no, because I'm like, why would you want to waste assets on that? That could be used on something else. But I guess the other part of my brain also says like, you just acquired those assets to try to get Donovan Mitchell. And then Danny Ainge basically told you to shove those protected picks up your ass and they didn't care about them at all. And that you just basically wasted your 11th pick.
Do you think that was a bad trade? That 11th pick trade?
I did at the time, and then I softened on it when I said I would love to be proven wrong by the Knicks getting Donovan Mitchell using these picks in part, and then they didn't, and the package that ultimately got Mitchell was all unprotected picks, which then makes me think like, well, shit, those picks are stupid then. Like, I definitely...
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people will say you could have taken, I mean, Ochag, Jabi, Agbaji, sorry. Agbaji was in the deal, right? Is that the calculus? Like, if they had taken him, that was not my preference. I would have taken Tari Eason. But you know, I know you follow the draft pretty closely as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would have made the difference? Like, keeping that pick and taking a guy, do you think that would have been a more valuable trade asset?
It's possible. I certainly think in that deal it would have been, because, like, I think particularly with a guy like Eason, and I'm with you, I would have taken Eason there too, I think. Eason or Griffin, I think would have been my choice.
Yeah.
Griffin, just because it was like...
Griffin, I'm not a medical guy, so that's... I think Griffin was clearly the safe pick in that sense, but it's tough to know what... I mean, he fell to 16 for a reason, so I'm sure there were...
I feel like it was medicals, and you know, so if that's what it is, you pass on him. But like, you know, yeah, I loved Eason. I thought to myself, like, man, in a world where Randall ends up not on this team, like, Eason would be great to slot in right behind Obi Toppin, but also be able to sort of maybe shift to small ball five or maybe shift to like big 3 minutes for a little bit. With the way,
yeah, I think Eason was the guy. Like, when we talk about Obi playing the five, mm-hmm. I think the limitations he has to do that, like, Eason has, like, Eason can play five and be like happy with it, you know. So
exactly,
you'd be happy with it. So
But so then, to your point, like, would he have been more valuable? I do think that there's something to be said for like, Eason went out there and like crushed it in summer league, and I know it's only summer league, but like, he had a really great showing for himself and already started showing like, hey, maybe this, like, he was looking like the better player on the floor next to a top three pick, you know. And so if he was given that stage with the Knicks, which the Knicks were clearly, you know, they were pumping up Grimes this year, and I think that inflated Grimes' value to a degree.
I mean, they made the finals, so
yeah. And like,
just pumping up, like, they were a good summer league team, right? So
yeah. But I mean, like, the role that they entrusted Grimes with this year, being like the engine, you know, like, if you had Eason out there playing like he was for the Rockets, you know, summer league team alongside Grimes, maybe those two become like centerpiece players in a Mitchell trade, and you can give up only the two unprotected picks that you want to give up, and then maybe give up that protected Mavericks pick you already had and call it a day, or like a swap or two. And then maybe that's the deal. And then you still have some powder left in the keg to burn later on if you need it. So yeah, I mean, I didn't love that trade at the time. I've like re-soured on it, because I thought I was going to be proven wrong for a minute. So I was like gearing myself up to eat crow about not being thrilled about that trade. And now I'm kind of back to the point where I'm like, no, I feel vindicated now. Like, I think that trade was stupid. These picks are so protected that they're more or less like glorified second rounders, at least in the views of like what a GM is going to value in a trade. So, cause they like these guys, like things that they can hold in their hand, not a, you know, it's like handing Danny Ainge an unprotected first round pick is like handing him a dollar bill. And to use another analogy from a second ago, like handing him a top 18 protected Washington pick is like handing him an NFT. Like, he doesn't know what the hell he's looking at. He's like, how do I use this? Like, is this currency? Like, when is this going to convey? Like, what does this get me? And, you know, is this just going to turn into second round picks if that team is terrible for a long time? You know, like, I feel like it's a lot more theoretical. Yeah,
I do think it's worth mentioning that those picks are not going to turn to seconds for a long time. Like, I think it's fairly safe to say they'll convey, but I do think that the uncertainty around those, I'm not sure I agree with you. I like Tari because I wanted him on the Knicks, not because I don't know how to, teams are going to have different valuations of players and stuff. Ochai Agbaji was used in the Cavs deal, and I had him in like the 30s on my draft board. I wasn't really very high on him at all. But I do think there's something to be said about, you know, I think Brock Ahler and the front office and his, you know, his influence in the front office operates on this idea that, you know, it's not an idea. It's pretty proven that like once you turn a pick into a player, it's like driving a car off the lot, right? It's less valuable. But I think other teams are, it's like when Hinkie traded, you know, he took on Jason Thompson and a couple of other bad contracts from the, and it wasn't just Sam Hinkie, I think it was Daryl Morey. He took on a couple of bad contracts from the Kings for first round picks. Kings didn't sign anyone worthwhile. They still sucked. And I think at the time that was still a revolutionary idea, right? That like you can take on bad contracts with picks and they're probably going to be good. And teams just, I've heard podcasts where people are like, teams just won't fight over protections because, you know, they're maintaining relationships or whatever. They don't see it as worth it. I wonder if that arbitrage, and like another part of that is like future picks are more valuable than current picks, right? Given how the average value, you know, pans out for, you know, non-top three picks. I wonder if that arbitrage opportunity, right, where Brock Ahler can be like, we should be trading like this pick. If he's not going to play, we should be trading this. Like, future draft picks are more valuable. I wonder if that's drying out because teams that are going to deal business with you are going to be like, we're protecting the shit out of those, you know? So like, there's not a much value to be gained there. But that's something, you know, I think it's interesting to think about, would the Knicks have been better off? I think I default to, I don't think the Knicks expected Donovan Mitchell to be available this year. I think the picks, the value of those picks will probably be a little bit higher next year when there's more certainty about particularly the Pistons and the Wizards. But yeah.
Yeah, I'll just say briefly and then I'll throw it to you, Miranda, to speak up because I feel like we've been going on for like 15 minutes between the two of us. But I'll just say in regards to the like, more valuable before you, or cars more valuable on the lot before you drive it off philosophy, the one in the hand, two in the bush, whatever you want to call it with draft picks. Like, I think the only difference with that is like, if I could give you in theory a number 25 overall pick, or now the player that we know Quentin Grimes is, I think you would take Quentin Grimes every time. Same with Quickly. So like, if you have a team that is proving really good at weaponizing their draft picks in the best way possible, which I think the Knicks and the Leon Rozier, that's been the one constant, you know, has been like
draft and develop.
Yeah. Not even necessarily with develop as much, but like they definitely drafted great. Like they found great value at like the 25th pick. If they had taken Eason and Walt Perrin and said, that's the dude. And he showed out in summer league for the team and looked like a real NBA player, I think that's more valuable than the theoretical value of a bunch of picks that might convey in the late teens or something. Because I don't know if every team necessarily trusts themselves to nail every draft pick. I think a lot of teams play the volume game, which is what we're seeing now with like the Thunder and like the Rockets. It'll start happening soon. The Cavs have done that in the past. The
Utah's doing it now too.
Exactly. Now the Jazz are getting in on the game of just saying, we're just going to get as many picks as humanly possible and hope we draft the next savior. But, you know, I think if you draft well, you can turn a mid to late first round pick into a player that's much more valuable than the pick was itself prior to that. Which is why I think in part, I was so disappointed to see the Knicks not make the pick, which maybe it was just their indictment of the draft class too. Maybe that's just them saying nobody's worth it. And maybe I should just trust them on that too, based off what I just said, that they're very good at evaluating talent. But I don't know. That's why it sort of rubbed me the wrong way when they made the trade. And I guess I'm ready to eat crow at any given moment about the values of those picks. But I said then, and I still sort of am clinging to it a little bit now, like I didn't love the deal because I just don't feel like those first round picks are going to be huge needle movers. Like, I think it's going to be like, you have to include three of those to equal one regular first round pick that you could just give like one of your unprotected ones. And like, how much does that really swinging the needle here, you know, in any given trade negotiation? How bad does it make you look when you eventually have to give up like quote unquote six first round picks to make a deal, even though three of them are heavily protected? I just feel like it's sort of a lose-lose all around. But Matt, I'm curious what you think about that. Sorry, I just rambled after I was saying I was going to throw it to you.
Do you think that the public image of the Knicks assets values may be distorted by the fact that like Utah, Ainge, there seemed to be a specific, like, they didn't like how the Knicks behaved. There was kind of an anti-Donovan, like, slightly anti-Donovan thing going on, to the point where there were, like, reports from, you know, historically credible reporters about the fact that, like, there might have been a tax on the Knicks. And sometimes, you know, we usually think of a tax as something that is taken from you in a material sense. But it's possible, or I'm curious if you think it's possible that a different organization facing the same situation might not only have had a different value of the players in general, as front offices do, but that Ainge and the Utah front office might have been harder on the Knicks than your average front office would have been in this position. Is that crazy, or do you think that could be a thing?
I don't know if I would call it crazy, but I certainly think that they got the value that they wanted eventually. I mean, I was trying to think about this, like, what's the Knicks equivalent of Sexton, Markkanen, and Agbaji? You know, is it like the problem is the Knicks don't really have like those like middle tier young players. You know, they kind of have either these guys that we're like pretty high on, like Obi Quickley, Grimes. I guess they have like McBride maybe could fall in like that category of like a Markkanen or like.
Well, no, but Markkanen's been paid, right? So if we play this out, right? I think Sexton and RJ are the closest analog, right? Because Sexton signed an extension immediately. RJ signed for a little bit more. Right. Is that fair to say?
Except RJ plays defense and isn't.
No, I'm not. But I'm sticking to talking about value. Yeah, I am definitely would prefer RJ to Sexton. But that seems to be the analog in this deal in terms of the parts, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, which I think it doesn't benefit the Knicks. You know what I mean? If that's like the equivalency they would have had to draw or whatever, I'm like, well, damn, you were going to lose no matter what then, because if you have to match Colin Sexton with RJ Barrett, like, you're already behind the eight ball. And then they're still going to put you over a barrel and be like, well, still got to give us the same amount of picks, though.
And however you view Agbaji, essentially another first-round pick, right? They just picked him.
Exactly, which they would probably be like, and Grimes. And then they'd be like, also, instead of Markkanen, we want Obi because we want a power forward, too. You know, like.
So if we hadn't traded for those three unprotected firsts, and we had. So would you have done Eason, three unprotecteds, plus RJ, plus we don't have really have an equivalent of Lowry. Let's say Fournier and like, you know, the Dallas sort of protected. Yeah. Let's say Fournier and the Dallas protected equals Lowry. Would you have done that?
I mean, I wouldn't have been happy about it. I would have eventually talked myself into it, like I talk myself into everything. If it was me making the decision, I would have been like, nah, kick rocks, like, which is basically what Leon did, probably.
And is that fair to say that would have been the price? Like, if we don't make that trade, you know, out of the first round?
I guess. Like, I don't know. Because, you know, again, I just don't think that there's great player analogs. But picks-wise, you know, even with the amount of picks that the Cavs gave up, that was about the number where I was saying, like, for weeks or whatever, like, if they start asking for, like, three unprotected first-round picks and, like, swaps and all this other crap, like, that's where I start thinking, like, all right, well, is Mitchell really – Mitchell, I think – I'm kind of curious what you guys think. Do you guys think – like, my thought after this deal is the Cavs made themselves into actual potential Eastern Conference contenders. Like
– that has a lot – I agree. That has a – that doesn't have to do with Darius Garland, by the way, or it does a little bit. But the guy that makes me think that is the fact that I think they have a generational player on their roster.
With Mobley. Yeah,
I was talking about Isaac Okoro actually, but
that's right. That's right. No, the prospect of them.
No, it's Mobley, and it's also like, what was the biggest thing we worried about when we traded for? We were talking about the Mitchell trade. Well, how is it Brunson Mitchell back? Personally, I think those were a little bit overblown, and like, I agree. I think the Knicks front office's stance is we're gonna make add value moves, right? So if we can add value, we're going to do that. So they would have thought we can add Mitchell for a price that we feel is like a win for us. We'll worry about the fit with Brunson later. But the Cavs actually had a better answer for how to manage that, right? Because they have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen behind him. So I think you're 100% right. Like that's a really, they had the ability to make that move, but given that it was, I don't think there was a trade around three unprotecteds unless the Knicks kept all of their, I think even with the three unprotecteds request, the Knicks would have had to give up two of the big four. I'll call their big four prospects, right? IQ, Grimes, RJ, and Obi. Where are you going from there? You're not going anywhere. I hear you on the player evals being tough to create equivalencies across, but I don't see it. I do not see a trade Utah would have accepted that didn't include RJ, one of those three other guys, and three unprotecteds. At which point you're like, to me, that's a hard no.
Yeah, no, it would be for me too. Like you're really setting yourself up Schitt's Creek that way.
Like, Matt, are you saying yes to, is there any permutation of that deal that you're saying yes to?
Honestly, if it starts with RJ and still ends with three first round picks, no. Like, no. It's just, I would have never done it. I don't know, Matt, what do you, like?
If they said we want RJ, three firsts, and like, whatever salary to match.
I think they would have wanted one of Quickly Grimes and Obi too. But even if they didn't, would you have done that? RJ, salary to match, and three unprotected. And swaps.
And two swaps, yeah.
I would do it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because 100% because of the 2004 Pedro to the Mets thing, where like I really think bringing Mitchell in is not the same for the Knicks as it is for every other team. Like getting him in there and having like a tangible thing to appeal to great players when they become available, not videos from the Sopranos actors and not like fake ass having your name in the Raptors and shit. Like you have Donovan Mitchell to present. You would have some other young talent also to present. You would still have some draft assets because you've collected so many. To me, like, it's RJ specific for me because RJ to me is so nebulous. Like, I love him because he's my guy that my team drafted and he's the highest pick since Ewing, and I like him a lot, and I've liked watching him grow, and I think his ceiling is still, you know, something I'm excited about. But, like, part of my brain is like, is he a great shooter? No. Is he a great defender? No. Is he a great, like, what's his best skill and how high is that? I'm not sure totally what I make of him yet. Donovan Mitchell is young enough still. So he's not like 27 or 28. He's like 25. He's young enough that, like, all right, give me that. I have something tangible for once. And multiplying that by whatever star comes next is totally worth RJ in 3 firsts.
Yeah, I hear that. I would, you know, I guess I would just want to be more cautious, which is why. But, you know, I still view RJ as a potential all-star, and I don't know if he would necessarily be a Mitchell-level guy, but I do think that he's very well connected with that next crop of guys that are going to start becoming available, which I think if he makes that next leap and doesn't even become like a 27 to 30 point per game type scorer like Mitchell is, but it hangs around that like 23, 24 point per game, like guy that can eventually be your Chris Middleton on a really good team. I think that he still has enough cachet with his generation, like the new like Gen Z generation of stars, to eventually get someone to the Knicks. So I think that's where my hope would be. And then eventually you'll be able to do that with all of your stuff in tow already, all your draft picks still hanging out. And maybe that's where the protected picks become more valuable as they get closer to like, all right, like this should convey next year now. So are you good with that? Like where you could sell that in a trade. It's not like, well, it might be next year, or it might be 2024 or 2025 or 2026. We're not totally sure. You know, you could start saying like, oh, Zion Williamson wants out now. Go figure. Cause every player ends up wanting out of New Orleans eventually when they hit their mid-20s. You know, now we have the stuff to go get him. And, you know, RJ Barrett's here and he's not as good as Zion, but he's definitely a good enough recruiter and well-respected.
I mean, if you had to hang out with Mason Ginsburg, wouldn't you want to get out of New Orleans too?
Does Zion have to hang out with Mason Ginsburg? Not just probably get covered not, by him?
But that would probably expedite things. So.
That would definitely be like, oof, man, I'm out of here.
Going back to Matt, if you had to throw in out of quickly Obi and Grimes, you have to throw in your favorite player out of those three. Would you do that deal still?
With RJ?
Yeah. And the three unprotected.
You want the one I would most likely throw in the deal or the one I would least likely throw in the deal?
Well, would you do... Yeah, sure. But, I mean, if you had to throw the guy that you like the most, would you do that?
Out of IQ... Grimes and Obi?
Yeah.
The one of those guys that I like the most is... Wow, that's really weird.
But I mean, whoever it is, if you had to throw them in addition, is that still like you trade them for Mitchell?
Yeah, I would still do it.
Wow. Yeah.
Because, I don't like when I was talking before, I think about RJ and All-Stars. If I gave you the line now, 1.5 RJ Barrett career All-Star appearances, are you taking the over or the under?
I would take the over because my predictive is 2, but yeah, that's
Alice, what would you say?
I would say over.
Over?
Well. I think over 1.
You both say over.
Mm-hmm. But okay. My over is like, I predict it's going to be 2. So it's I think that's a good over under.
I predict 13 starting.
Quickly Grimes and Obi, same line, 1.5. Are you taking the over for any of them?
Over.
You are
for as a group. I'm definitely thinking over.
No, each individual. Like, will Obi? If I give you Obi 1.5, is he over?
He's under for 1.5. Quickly, I'm. Yeah, I'm going to say fuck it. I'm going to say quickly 2 over All-Star. Like, in terms of impact, Grimes zero. I don't buy the interior game. Like, I think I honestly think he's going to be modern day Danny Green, which is not a slight at all. Danny Green signed an $11 million a year contract to win more rings in San Antonio, which is probably the biggest deal ever.
But shout out Danny, L.I.
Yeah. Danny Green, Mikal Bridges, I think he'll be that level of player. That is not an all-star. So I'm going to go with under for Grimes.
I would probably go under on all three.
You don't think Quigley make an all-star?
1.5, so that would mean more than one. I think maybe he'll get one. I don't know if he'll get two. You know, I think I go under on all three. I think they're all going to be solid starters. I actually kind of think Obi might be the one that I would be the most inclined to give the over on, just because
he's going to put up numbers.
Yeah, I could see a world where if he gets fully unleashed, he'll be a 2010 guy, 2010 and four or something like that. Which those sort of guys make all-star teams. They're on really good teams. You know, if he's like the third best player on a team that's like the three seed or something, he could definitely get on that way.
So if the Knicks had a player that averaged 2010 and five last year,
the difference would be that Obi would be doing it on like 18% usage versus like 33% usage.
Probably like 66 true shooting, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. A little different. And those stats do matter to guys now when they're voting for, like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like those kind of things show up when you watch the games. Like, if you watch, you don't need advanced analytics to tell you that Randall's 2010 and 5 wasn't really. It's not the same thing as KG going 2010 and 5, right? So
exactly.
Talked a lot about RJ Barrett earlier. RJ Barrett, obviously, the man who broke the curse of Charlie Ward, extended as a first-round pick with the Knicks. Last question of the night for me is the curse of Mike D'Antoni. Pringles, of course, the last Knicks coach to last at least three full seasons. Tom Thibodeau enters year three. Asking you today, will Tom Thibodeau get to the end of season three?
First of all, that's a wild stat that I had never thought about.
It gets weirder. Then the last one before him is like Van Gundy. Like, it's not just like this century. You go all through Knick history, other than like Holzman and like two other people, they change shit up.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, he's not going to. He's going to get fired 20 games into the season.
20 games in?
Yep, I think 20. Even Mark Berman said that, and I know that Mark Berman is like tight with Tibbs. At least that's my impression from where it seems like his info comes from. But Berman even said that like on our podcast at one point, like on Locked On Knicks. He was like, you know, he thinks Tibbs might get like 20 games to prove that he can stay, and if they're not doing super well, they're just gonna be like, yeah, we need to change and just move on. So I think that's the case, and I honestly still think that's so stupid. I wish the teams would just be more resolute. Like, don't give these stupid, like, don't set goals that you know aren't going to be achieved. You know that Tibbs isn't going to like fully turn this shit around. At least I feel pretty confident he's not going to, based off what we saw last year. He's not going to Leopard doesn't change its spots or whatever the whole, you know, saying is. Like, he's not going to do that. So I think it's a fool's errand. Like, if they know that they're probably going to fire him 20 games in the season, just fire him before the season. So then Johnny Bryan or whoever else can get a full training camp with these guys and everything.
Also, like, does anybody want Tom Thibodeau having like a 20 game audition? He's going to burn the shit out of all of his players the first 20 games of the year. It's going to be six guys playing like 45 minutes. Yeah. You can't give Tom Thibodeau that kind of like, here's your test, Tom. He'll burn everyone out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to if you believe, did he have... Here's the thing. He played RJ and Julius crazy minutes. He played Burks crazy minutes after Burks became point guard. Otherwise, he has shown a willingness to be democratic. As much as, you know, a lot of us thought that Elfrid Payton shouldn't start, he was democratic with Elfrid Payton's minutes. By the end of the season, even when he started, he wasn't getting more than 18 to 20 minutes. I think that's a scenario in which it could work. But yeah, other than that, because I think the most frustrating thing is the biggest criticism you could have of the Knicks like from a different standpoint, is like that is a team that their bench unit for 2 years now has killed, right? And their starters have failed. We often use that argument to say, well, you should mix the match them a little bit more. The other argument is that if you have a team that clearly has better depth than top end talent, shouldn't you be using, like, the whole point of depth, the reason why, you know, if you look at Nolan Richardson and 40 Minutes of Hell in college, you know, teams that have a lot of depth use that to keep their starters fresh. And we haven't gone to that, which would be fine if the starters played their ass off for 40 minutes or 48 minutes. But you see with guys like Julius Randle, that doesn't always work out. But, you know, that's a way for Tibbs to take advantage, I think, right? It's like, play the bench more, have more democratic, more guys in the 20 to 30 minute range than like a few guys in the 35 plus range. And not even, this is not even about load management or the injury stuff. It's just because like you're just better suited for that, right? I also, so sorry, did you guys have any other thoughts on that? Or I had a trivia question. So Matt always has the good trivia questions. I have one. I don't know if it'll be this surprising or tough for both these guys who know a lot more about the Knicks than me. So I'll say this. Who was the last Knicks draft pick to make an all-NBA team?
As a Knick or just in general?
Ever.
Okay.
But they have to be drafted by the Knicks. Alex, you're the guest. I'll give you the first crack.
Sorry, I was on mute for a second. Does this include all defense or is this strictly all NBA?
All NBA.
Man, drafted by the Knicks. I feel like it's gonna end up being like Clyde or something.
It's not Kevin Knox. I'll give you
that. Oh, no, it has to be Ewing. Ewing obviously made them. So I think it might be Ewing, to be honest. I can't think of another one that would have made an all NBA team that was drafted by the Knicks. Yeah, okay. I'm gonna go Ewing.
Ewing is your guess. Matt?
I'm going to say David Lee.
David Lee is a very good guess. He did make an all-star team, but he did not make an all-NBA. Patrick Ewing did make all-NBA teams. He was not the last guy. Here's a hint, Alex. Mm-hmm. You have a site named after the player who is the answer to this question.
Oh, it was Rod Strickland. Oh, what do you know? Okay.
That's an idiot. Yeah, he made Strickland. It with the Bullets, so yeah.
Actually, because didn't he never make an all-star team? Was that a thing?
I think that is a thing. Yeah, that's correct. But he did make the all-NBA second team in 1988. That's so an interesting. Bizarre. Yeah.
He made second team and not even get the all-star game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always find those to be so bizarre when guys make like all league teams, but somehow didn't make the all star team that year. It's like, what was everybody missing at all star time? Like,
there's also like, I think Marc Gasol won Defensive Player of the Year, but wasn't first team all defense 1 year. So,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous. I don't know how all this stuff works, but that's an interesting fact. Fun fact. I would have never guessed that I always thought that Rod Strickland was like the, I never knew that he got an accolade like that, honestly. I thought that because I knew that he never made an all-star team, so I was like, oh, he was just always that, like, that dude who's, like, fringe all-star, like Mike Conley was for, like, most of his career, you know, until he got – didn't he finally got an all-star nod
recently,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, like, took him, like, forever and a half to finally get that one, or, like, a CJ McCollum or something like that. I always thought that was more Strickland's thing, but that's very interesting that he did make an all-NBA.
Well, I'm sure when we give the Pod Strickland Emmy speech, we will we'll mention Rod Strickland for that fact. Before we take off, Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Was there anything you wanted to plug besides everything I plug all the time, the Strickland, all the great stuff we're doing.
Yeah, just the Strickland, Locked On Knicks. If you don't listen to that already, we're about to be 5 days a week again in the next couple weeks. We've been doing, you know, we've been like quote unquote on vacation doing three podcasts a week
instead of slackers.
So we're about to switch back into season mode again. So keep an eye out for that. Yeah, nothing else really to plug other than those two things. So just do those. That's it.
Cool.
I'm going to plug the New York Mets.
Oh, yeah, I'll plug the New York Mets. Bounce not the Jets, back. Though. Not the Jets after week one.
We do not speak of such things. We do not speak of such things here.
Do not watch the Jets. They are bad.
You didn't give up 35 points to the Lions. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, they're just – oh, the Jets, though, man. It was ugly. That offensive line is a disaster area right now, so –
Not there is a certain kindness in a team letting you know from the start that they don't have it. No, like, you can put your hope away right now. You're not going to get hurt.
Like, oh, Joe Flacco only gets 1.5 seconds to process any given play. All right, this is going to be – I already know how today's going to go. It's done. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's it. But thanks for having me on, guys. This is very, very stimulating.
Yeah, thank you so much, dude. It's always good to have you on.
Comes so easily. With a bunch of old pros like us, when you just get on a mic, but peek behind the curtain. Anyone that made it this far in the pod before we started, we were like, "What are we going to talk about?" And we were like, "I don't know." And we just like figure it out. So it's always fun.
Yeah, super cool. So that's it for this episode of the Believe Knicks Pod. We will say goodbye, and we will see you soon.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.